Many a horror movie is focused on a rapidly spreading infection that's immune to all medical treatment. It might not look as dramatic as it does in the movies, but there's growing concern about real-life infections that have developed a resistance to the antibiotics and antifungal medications in our medical toolkit. The medical community is worried about these rapidly evolving superbugs and the difficulty in bringing effective new medications and treatments to market. Our next guest shares the inside story of the race to stay ahead of those diseases. Dr. Matt McCarthy is an assistant professor of medicine at Weill Cornell and a staff physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital. His new book out this week is Superbugs, The Race to Stop an Epidemic. Dr. McCarthy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Well, you tell the history in the book of antibiotics, and in some ways they've been around with us for thousands of years, but as far as something that's been produced on purpose and used on large scale, this is less than a century old technology. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you know, this is what fascinated me is that humans have been ingesting antibiotics for millennia, whether they knew it or not. If you go in to look at the bones of the mummies that we have exhumed from Africa and from Egypt, we find that inside the bones they have antibiotics such as tetracycline. And they didn't even necessarily know how this was working, but they knew that something in the food that they were eating had a special property. And what I was focused on, especially in my book, was how we came to commercialize these products. And I start with penicillin, which was the first commercially available antibiotic. And that ushered in what we called the golden era of antibiotic development and of drug discovery. And the 1950s produced this array of life-saving medications that actually got us to a point where we could extend life far beyond what we had ever predicted. And that sets the stage for what I end up writing about, which is how these antibiotics that were so valuable and so essential are starting to not work anymore. And I wanted to figure out why that happened, and then more importantly, what we can do about it.
Right. And the short answer to why is evolution happening pretty quickly. A lot of dangerous bacteria have just evolved resistances, it sounds like, to the drugs we've been using to treat them.
You nailed it. And this, to me, was the most fascinating part of my research for the book, was finding out all of the ingenious ways that bacteria are evolving to evade the antibiotics that we throw at them. And two of the specific examples I write about are things called efflux pumps, which are these microscopic vacuum cleaners that the bacteria have created that can suck up an antibiotic and then just spit it out. And one of the other things I talk about are these metalloproteinases, which are specific enzymes that can chop up any antibiotic that we give it. And so what I'm looking at is, okay, now that we recognize that the bacteria are outfoxing us, what do we do about it? How do we invest in antibiotics in a strategic way so that the next time you go into the hospital is armed with an armamentarium of drugs that can save your life?
Talking to Dr. Matt McCarthy about his new book, Superbugs, The Race to Stop an Epidemic. And you talk through the book about your work on a trial for a new antibiotic. And the heart of your book, in a lot of ways, isn't a science or medical story. It's a human story. You share the stories of the people you talk to who ultimately chose or didn't choose or weren't able to participate in these trials. Can you talk about the importance of meeting the people behind this drug testing?
You know, absolutely. What I found over the past, you know, I'm an infectious disease specialist, and over the past 5 years is I see all of these articles written about the bacteria or about these policy proposals, but the thing that was being left out were the patients. And that's the reason I went into medicine, is that I love interacting with patients and being at the bedside and talking to people. And the book really generated out of a question that a patient asked me several years ago, which was, why is it so hard to make a new antibiotic? And what I wanted to do was bring readers into the hospital to see what kind of decisions doctors are being faced to make, and also to see the patients and see what kind of things they're having to deal with infections. You know, the infections that I could treat with an oral antibiotic 10 years ago, I then had to switch to an intravenous antibiotic 5 years ago because the pills were no longer working. And then in the past few years, I've found that these intravenous treatments are not working. And what's terrifying is that the big pharma is not particularly interested in coming up with new drugs, new antibiotics, because they don't turn enough of a profit for them. So I wanted to make readers feel what it's like to be at the bedside of a patient with an infection for which there was no treatment, and the reason being that the profit margins were too slim, because it outrages me, and I want other people to recognize what's going on inside of our hospitals.
Let's stay on that issue. Do you see a solution to that problem? These are drugs that somebody's not going to take every day for the rest of their lives, like my reflux medication, say. It's harder to make money on them. Is there a way to fill that gap and make more of that research happen?
Absolutely. And this is going to be the most important political issue that no one is yet talking about. Antibiotics are by definition a market failure, which means that the free market of supply and demand does not account for the fact that we need more of these drugs. And it means when you have a market failure that you need a government intervention. And so what we're going to be hearing, probably not for another 6 months or so, is a number of proposals put on the table to spur the investment of investment of antibiotics. And these are called pull incentives and push incentives. And so these are ways to get these companies to make new drugs. So I'll give you an example of a push incentive is to say to a $1 billion company, your corporate tax rate is 20%. We'll cut it in half if you promise to invest $100 million in antibiotics. Now, the idea of giving a tax break to a multi-billion-dollar company makes a lot of us, you know, think twice, but that's kind of the proposal that we're thinking about. And then another thing is a pull incentive, which is to say to a company, if you're able to make a new antibiotic that's a life-saving treatment, rather than giving you 5 to 7 years of market exclusivity as we normally do, we'll give you 25 years so that no one can challenge the patent on that. Again, this is all just so that they can have an interest in making new drugs, because as I quote one pharmaceutical CEO in my book, says he has an ethical mandate to charge as much money as possible for antibiotics because he's accountable to shareholders, not patients.
Speaking of ethics, that's another theme in your book. And you talk about the early days of antibiotic development having, among others, two ethical nightmares. Testing of prisoners under Nazi Germany, horrific testing. And then here in the United States, the Tuskegee experiments allowing people to go untreated, not even knowing that they had syphilis for years. What kind of ethical lessons do we learn from those two nightmares?
Well, you know, these are things that are mentioned in passing in a lot of medical ethics textbooks, but I wanted to do a deep dive into both of these because at the heart of both of these horrors is an antibiotic. It's the issue that we had penicillin available for the patients in Tuskegee who we withheld it from them. We didn't even tell them that there was a treatment for syphilis. And then looking at what was going on with the Nazi doctors and the experiments that they were doing on patients with antibiotics, these things are horrifying. And I wanted to set the stage to show just how many safeguards are now in place, because in many cases we could not trust doctors to monitor themselves, to do ethically responsible research. And now that I'm on the ethics committee of my hospital, and I can tell you I was in an ethics committee meeting 45 minutes ago, these things we take care very seriously. And to run my trial, I had to go through 8 months of back and forth with an IRB, an institutional review board, to say, we want to make sure that if you're going to bring a new drug into the biggest hospital in Manhattan, we better be sure that it is safe for them. And not only that, but that you have adequate follow-up. And I wanted people to know that when you walk into a hospital, you know, you may be asked to participate in a clinical trial. And this book is to give you a bit of a guidebook to say, here's what may happen, here's why it might be a good idea or a not-so-good idea.
And you write about the frustration while you're in that eight-month process with that institutional review board. But in your, I think it's in your epilogue, you say, in hindsight, again, and you knew it all along, these are the good guys.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It delights me to speak with somebody who has read this book so closely, because you hit the nail on the head again, which is that these IRB people were driving me nuts. I just wanted to start my trial with a drug that I thought was going to help patients, and they kept saying, wait a second. We want to make sure that we understand what could happen to this drug if it got into somebody's sperm. Could it be passed on to a partner? Could it, you know, how inside and out every aspect of this drug I had to understand before I was allowed to give it to a patient. And despite my frustration at that, that's exactly how the process should work.
We're talking to Dr. Matt McCarthy about his new book, Superbugs, The Race to Stop an Epidemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about the risk of antibiotic-resistant infections? Have you encountered one yourself or for a loved one or maybe as a healthcare provider yourself? Do you have questions for Dr. McCarthy about his work on these issues? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Dr. Matt McCarthy about his new book, Superbugs, The Race to Stop an Epidemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the government should be more involved in researching or promoting research on new treatments for antibiotic-resistant infections, maybe developing new antibiotics? Should drug companies be offered incentives? Have you, a loved one, been infected by a superbug, or have you seen this in your facility if you work in healthcare? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to a caller now. David is with us in Gurnee, Illinois. David, hi.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, a quick comment slash question, I guess, for your guest there. You know, whenever I hear about pharmaceutical products, it's always the big bad pharma and how much they charge, how expensive drugs are. So I don't know that pharmaceutical companies can afford, if there is not enough margin, to try to develop a product like, you know, something that you're talking about. So I think the audience should understand, in the overall scheme of healthcare, I'm pretty sure the drugs themselves are less than 10%, whereas, you know, you have all these insurance companies and hospitals. Everybody's making profit, but pharmaceutical companies shouldn't. I just don't understand. So what's the incentive to the pharmaceutical companies to go after an epidemic like this if, to your point, there is really no margin because everybody's always asking.
Gotcha, David. Thanks for the call. Dr. McCarthy, your thoughts?
I completely agree. And, you know, if you read my book, I don't present Big Pharma as the bad guy. I quote a number of scientists who say we need the pharmaceutical industry because they have perfected the process of making these drugs. And the reason I describe this as a political issue is that we all recognize we need these drugs and that Big Pharma is not going to invest in them without some motivation. And we're going to have the government step in. And what I want people to understand is when this conversation comes up 6 months from now and your congressman or your state senator makes a proposal, I want readers to be able to understand and navigate and say, this is a good proposal or this is a bad proposal. And without an understanding of how desperate this issue is, I don't know that we can all be on the same page about it. You know, and I mentioned that one of the pharmaceutical companies is transferring some of their patents to a Native American reservation because they can invoke tribal exclusivity, and it's a way to make even more money off of the drugs that they have. And the fact that we've reached this breaking point where we're doing things like that means that the government needs to step in, but we want to make sure it does so in the right way.
David, thanks a lot for that call. Dr. McCarthy, I want to look at some of the frontiers of alternatives to antibiotics here. You write about at NPR Reports on Today, CRISPR, gene editing technology being used to edit viruses to, check me on this, create proteins that can disrupt these infection-causing bacteria?
That's absolutely right, and it's one of the most exciting developments that's going on right now in molecular medicine, is that CRISPR is essentially a molecular scalpel where we can cut out sections of DNA and insert new sections. And it was one of the more thrilling parts for me to report on in my book. But the idea, and what's interesting about this, is that CRISPR can be used to create these new treatments, but they're not broad spectrum. They're very specific for certain pathogens. And when you say that, the companies that would make them get very nervous because they want very broad drugs that could treat a variety of illnesses. And CRISPR is a very expensive process to create a treatment for a specific illness. And that, I think, is going to require additional intervention to spur the companies to make those things. But CRISPR is a fascinating issue, both from the medical perspective, but also the ethical perspective, that we can fundamentally alter human DNA in a way that it's passed down to future generations.
And Dr. McCarthy, in our last couple minutes, it takes time to develop that kind of technology to develop a new antibiotic. How about stuff we can do now when it comes to A, hygiene, and B, how we prescribe antibiotics?
Yep. So I think to answer the second question first, how we prescribe antibiotics. Right now, there is far too much inappropriate use of it. I know the New York Times reported on Saturday of the widespread use of antibiotics in orange groves, and that we're giving tuberculosis and syphilis drugs to the orange groves. And I've written about the antifungals that we use in tulip gardens to keep the flowers pretty. This is a problem. We can't be using the drugs in this capacity. And I can tell you another ethical issue that's coming is whether or not we should use our best antibiotics on our pets. Should your cat have access to these top-line antibiotics? There are people who would say absolutely yes, and people who feel absolutely not. And, you know, I wrote this book because I feel like there are a number of conversations that are coming to the head that are going to be had in the next few years, and I want people to have an informed understanding of how complex this issue is. In terms of keeping your body healthy and what you can do, you know, it starts off with some rather mundane things like getting 8 hours of sleep a night, not drinking alcohol to excess, and washing your hands with soap and water. But another thing that people don't always know is to talk to your doctor and ask if you are somebody who is on a medication that impairs the immune system, or if you have a medical condition that impairs the immune system. A lot of my patients don't recognize that they are a moderate or high risk for infections, and they put themselves in danger. They may go into a musty basement, for example, that has mold in it. And if you have an intact immune system, that's not a big deal. But if you're on a certain subset of medications, that can put you at risk. And so I wanted to write sort of a guidebook so that people could understand just how to differentiate between low risk, moderate risk, and high risk.
Dr. McCarthy, thanks so much for joining us today.
This was wonderful. Thank you.
That's Dr. Matt McCarthy, assistant professor of medicine at Weill Cornell and staff physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital. His new book out this week is Superbugs: The Race to Stop an Epidemic.